episode 1 of Sisterly Inquiry is a part of the Unknown Stories Abroad project. Enjoy!
Hello, everyone!
Welcome to Sisterly Inquiry, a podcast in which we discuss a variety of topics for your listening pleasure. I'm Sam.
And I'm Lauren.
So let's get this started. Today we're discussing Xinjiang, an autonomous region in China where the indigenous Uyghur population are being held in so-called re-education centers by the Chinese government. So according to Vox, this is the largest mass internment of an ethnic religious minority group since World War II.
So not to compare tragedies, but just for people that don't understand the gravity of this situation, these are basically concentration camps, not re-education centers.
In what China calls re-education centers, Uyghurs are forced to undergo psychological indoctrination programs.
Which, so for people that don't know what we mean when we say Uyghur, it's a group of people that share the same religion, correct? Can you go into that more?
Yeah, so they're a Muslim minority group that lives in the region. China actually acquired the region in the 13th century. Uyghurs are not purely native to this area. They are also in different countries, neighboring countries around the region.
But, so in China, though, Uyghurs are native to Xinjiang.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Got it.
China's government has actually detained somewhere around 1 million to 3 million Uyghurs in what they call re-education centers. These people are being forced to undergo what China calls psychological indoctrination programs.
That's interesting. So what is the, like, the major religion of China? Do they have one? Is there one that's, like, most popular?
I'm actually not sure, but I do know that Buddhism is practiced, and I believe some sectors of Christianity are also practiced in China.
Okay, so Uyghurs are definitely
the minority.
Yes, so they're in indoctrination, does that mean they're trying to convert them?
Yeah, they're trying to make them proud to be Chinese and kind of let go of their
culture.
Yeah.
So, what makes them think that they're not proud to be Chinese? I mean, you said they took over in the 13th century. That was such a long time ago. Like, what are they doing anything to indicate?
A few years back, there was some terrorist acts in China, and tensions rose, and somehow it led to the creation of these re-education centers. Hatred spread, and clearly, it took over.
Can you imagine if, like, America was defined by our terrorist group, like, if a whole identity of a country or a group of some sort, a culture, if they were all labeled by one extremist group, you know, everyone, the whole world would think that, you know, all of America believes the same things that the domestic terrorists that stormed the White House believe, and that's just obviously so unfair, and once again, not to compare, because this situation doesn't even come close to what's happening over there. But again, it's just so people can really put it into perspective. Labeling an entire group based on one subgroup of extremists is absolutely absurd. Call it like it is.
The UN actually has defined this situation as genocide. Evidence was found that Chinese authorities subjected women to mass sterilization, forcing them to take birth control, or even having abortions, and putting them into these camps if they resisted.
How? I mean, I'm just shocked that more people don't know about this.
China produces a lot of products.
Yes.
Around the world, and these people in these camps are being exploited through cheap labor and are forced to manufacture clothing and other products for sale that are being sold around the world. And I believe that there have been attempts made to ensure that the products that other countries are buying are not coming from these camps, but those efforts are just not enough.
True. I remember I read something that, so obviously when COVID hit, masks were a big hot commodity that everyone wanted to get their own personalized mask, and they were making masks. Uyghurs were making masks, and they were coming to the U.S., and eventually it became a problem, so I believe I read that the government had to make sure that they weren't buying like, the people that are sending it over to America had to prove that these were not made in these quote-unquote re-education centers.
Yeah, and the fact that other governments have to ensure that products aren't being made in something being called, or something that's called re-education centers.
That's just I mean, like, I just cannot. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
It's ridiculous. This policy flows from China's president, who visited Xinjiang in 2014 in the wake of the terror attack by the Uyghur separatists. Shortly after, according to documents leaked to the New York Times, he directed local officials to respond with, quote, absolutely no mercy.
That's disgusting. These are his people. These are citizens of his country. But not even... So, I know I'm giving a lot of my opinions, so I just want to kind of backtrack. 2014 is when this terrorist attack happened?
Yes, that's when the president visited the region.
And so, how long have these centers been a thing?
Since 2014.
And I'm just now hearing about it, and it is February 2021.
7 years later.
They have kept this so hush-hush for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But when you did send me some stuff to read about it, I read that Australia flew some... Because there's actually a Uyghur population in Australia as well. And they are a neighboring country, obviously, and they flew, I want to say it was some sort of a drone, something that can capture photo, and there are photos of these quote-unquote re-education centers, and like I said, I don't want to compare, but you guys, they're concentration camps. Like, put that photo next to something from World War II, again, not to compare, but there are similarities.
According to a human story that I'll read later, a woman explains that she was in the camp, or the re-education center, at first got had some medical issues and then had to be brought back into the camp after she was treated. And she said that it had gotten drastically worse. So these camps have not only been wrong from the start, but have gotten, like, brutal as time has gone on.
Did she specify?
According to her testimony, things had gotten a lot worse and even more violent, and she endured 9 more months of this and was only able to flee with the help of the Uyghur Human Rights Project. She said that the torture was constant. Many of her cellmates were broken and would no longer speak.
So she says cellmates.
Yes. Yep. She calls them cellmates.
So that's shocking.
She said that they stripped off their clothing, tore out their earrings. She said that her own ears were bleeding. Any woman under 40 was raped. Everyone in the camp experienced this. This is her words. She states, "Of course I did too. I was also beaten. I was kicked and stamped on. Once so much on my private parts that I was bleeding. And since I had to have my ovaries removed."
Oh my God.
She was actually pulled from the street and put into one of these camps.
That is absolutely heartbreaking. How is this happening?
And no one's really talking about it. Like, all the government policy that's, quote, handling it is simply not enough.
Right, I mean, if the UN knows about it and they're classifying it as genocide, then, I mean, I'm not someone that's all for war or anything, but why isn't anyone doing anything?
I'm not sure. I can't say. Internal documents from the Coons County Justice System in 2017 and 2018 were provided to BBC by Adrian Zenz, a leading expert on China's policies, detailed planning and spending for transformation through education of, quote, key groups. In those same documents, the education process is described as, quote, washing brains, cleansing hearts, strengthening righteousness, and eliminating evil.
So how long are these people, you know, being kept in these camps? Because she fleed,
yeah.
Right? So it sounds like she escaped it. So yeah. It kind of sounds, and she also said cellmate, so it kind of sounds like jail,
mm-hmm.
You know? She drew that parallel. So is it until they inevitably die?
I'm honestly not sure how long these people are being held. I was only able to find 2 stories of survivors that were willing to speak out about the horrific treatment of the Uyghur population.
And they escaped. So I wonder if it's either, you know, you pretend that you've quote-unquote changed, but even so, I just don't know if they'd let you out that easy based on what I've heard so far.
And continuing off of that, it's kind of insane to think that a government leader would straight up approve of this. Mm-hmm. And according to Charles Parton, who was a former British diplomat in China and is now a senior associate at Royal United Services, he says that this is very centralized and goes to the top. Parton also says there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that this is Xi Jinping's policy. He said it was unlikely that Xi or other top party officials would have directly said that they authorized rape and torture, but Parton also continued saying they would certainly be aware of it. And the woman whose story we shared earlier, her name is Tersine Ziwadan. She's a survivor of this. And the only reason that she was able to flee was because of the Uyghur Human Rights Project.
Yeah, what is that?
They're basically a group that is actively fighting to combat the persecution of the Uyghur population.
Are they in the same territory, or are they from other countries?
All over the world, they try to help the Uyghur population and give them a voice because they are a religious minority.
Right. And then you also mentioned that there was another survivor. Do you know the details of that?
Yeah, her name is Gulbahar Hegwaji. She's a survivor from these camps as well. She states, "After 10 years living in France, I returned to China to sign some papers and I was locked up. For the next 2 years, I was systematically dehumanized, humiliated, and brainwashed." She actually fled to France with her family in 2006 from Xinjiang, in which there was an, quote, unprecedented period of repression. She had to make the difficult decision of permanently leaving and stripping herself of her Chinese status with the implication of no longer seeing her family or even saying goodbye, or she had to apply for a 10-year residence permit in France. She decided on the latter. After 10 years, she had to return to Xinjiang. She was interrogated in a very hostile manner and was accused of her family being terrorists while in France. She was then put into a so-called re-education center, and here are some of her stories. Hegwaji states, "There were 40 of us in the room, all women, wearing blue pajamas. It was a nondescript rectangular classroom. A big metal shutter, perforated with tiny holes that let light in, hid the outside world from us. 11 hours a day, the world was reduced to this room. Our slippers squeaked on linoleum as we marched up and down the room. This was called physical education. In reality, it was tantamount to military training."
And you said this was all women, right?
Yeah, her experience was 40 women in the same room.
Okay, but the camps themselves, they have men. Do they have children?
Yes. The other survivor, Tersine, actually mentions that she saw, quote, young boys beaten to a pulp.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, very disturbing. It seems like it's psychologically breaking down these people.
Absolutely. It's definitely making them lose, like, their will.
Yeah.
It's just, they're exhausting them physically, they're exhausting them mentally, they're exhausting them emotionally, and they're just breaking them down, little by little, in all these different ways.
She continues with saying, "We were panting like cattle. Sometimes one or another of us would faint. If she didn't come around, a guard would yank her to her feet and slap her awake. If she collapsed again, he would drag her out of the room and we'd never see her again, ever."
Oh my god.
So it just makes you wonder, what is really going down? Even the survivors don't have the full story.
This, you know, so I've been saying this throughout the whole thing, and I stand by it. You cannot compare tragedies. This is definitely its own demon. This is people need to hear about this.
Absolutely.
This is one of the worst things I've ever heard, especially in modern day.
It's very disturbing that it's the only way this is being handled is through, like, policy, like, through trade. Nothing's happening. None of these people are being saved.
Right. And obviously, like you mentioned earlier, other countries are aware that this is happening.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. The UN has straight up said that this is genocide, but yet nothing's happening.
It's the president's will, right?
Yeah.
Do the Chinese people know? Or because they know...
I definitely believe they would, but...
I believe they wouldn't.
Like, the true actuality of what's going on.
Because the communist government is... They censor everything. Everything.
I didn't consider that.
Everything is censored over there, so, like, social media, TV, everything. So, I wouldn't think that they would want the rest of their country to know how horrific
conditions actually are over there, and it doesn't matter if other countries know, because people in China still, you know, they don't see our social media, they see their own, and it's all censored, so they, you know what I mean? So it doesn't matter if other countries know, as long as their people don't know.
I would imagine that the Uyghur population that isn't miraculously in these camps is trying to spread the message, but
I hope so.
Get found out, like, they're put into these camps.
Right.
So I imagine that more remote areas of China, or areas of China that aren't near this area, or that have any Uyghur populations, they probably have no idea that this is happening, much like most of the population of the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
So where will this change start?
I mean, everything starts with the people. The first thing is knowledge, right? So that's what we're doing right now, is we're making people aware of it. You can't make a change until you're aware of the problem.
Absolutely.
So I think that's where it starts, especially for, you know, people like us who live very privileged lives in America, and we can't just, you know, hop over there and fix it ourselves. We have to be realistic about what we can do, and this is something we can do. It's not perfect. It's not, like, gonna fix things overnight, but it's a step in the right direction.
It's definitely a start. We need a simple start.
Yes.
This is widely under-discussed.
Absolutely.
Continuing on from her experience, she explains that silence was enforced, but since they were so physically taxed to the limit, they no longer felt like talking anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So these people are tired,
mm-hmm.
in and out of these camps.
Mm-hmm. They're breaking down their will to live. When you don't have a will to live, you don't have a will to
fight.
Yeah, exactly.
This last excerpt from her article in The Guardian sums up her experience. She states, "How even to begin the story of what I went through in Xinjiang? How to tell my loved ones that I lived at the mercy of police violence, of Uyghurs like me, who, because of the status their uniforms gave them, could do as they wished with us, our bodies and souls, of men and women whose brains had been thoroughly washed, robots stripped of humanity, zealously enforcing orders, petty bureaucrats working under a system in which those who do not denounce others are themselves denounced, and those who do not punish others are themselves punished. Persuaded that we were enemies to be beaten down, traitors and terrorists, they took away our freedom."
Literally. The freedom of religion is so important. It's one of the foundations of our country. So people should care. I mean, there's a reason America even exists, is we were escaping that. We wanted freedom. So it's like, how can we sit here and act like do-to-do-to-do, doesn't matter what's happening over there. Like, this is why we exist.
Absolutely.
We should care. These are real people that are suffering.
Yeah, no human should ever face this sort of treatment. And it's just being ignored or swept under the rug and completely downplayed by the Chinese government.
Strategically.
Absolutely. Strategically is the right word to use. It should be widely discussed. And these people should be helped by whatever we can do. And if this is a start, then this is what we can do. We need to spread the word about what these people are experiencing.
And maybe we should also, you said there was an advocacy group.
Yes.
Do they have a website?
They do. Uyghur Human Rights Project, or UHRP. It is UHRP.org.
Okay, and I'm sure they have, you know, some information on there as well.
Yes, they have multiple steps of action toward helping Uyghurs across the globe.
And they know way more than we do.
Absolutely.
So go to that website. Go to that website.
Yes, please do further research.
Yes.
Awareness is the first step to action. And it's time for action. And what's even more disturbing about this whole thing, genocide happening right under our noses, is that we learn about bystanders in history, and mm-hmm. we are taught to look down on them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not make the same mistake of living in comfort and ignorance. Because
mm-hmm.
we will be those people in the textbooks that we learn about.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
So please continue to do your own research. Check out the Uyghur Human Rights Project website.
Very important.
Spread awareness. Talk about this.
And thank you so much for listening to this podcast, too. I mean, it means
hope
a lot.
Joining, yeah.
Yeah.
Hope you join for the next episode.
This has been Lauren.
And Sam from Sisterly Inquiry.